This is Radio EcoShock with Alex Smith.
There was a scientist on the radio this morning. He said that it'll get a lot hotter more each day.
With heat waves all over the world, even pole to pole, are we on the edge of catastrophe? Renowned Swedish scientist Johan Rockström answers in a short TED presentation, August 15th, 2024. Chevron announced a new frontier for oil, drilling deep below the sea, more oil forever. I check out the similarities to the 2010 Deepwater Horizon blowout, America's worst single marine disaster. A new article in the journal Nature asks, what is the hottest temperature humans can survive? We covered that with the lead scientist, Ollie Jay, back in 2019.
The word that Mrs. Bronson is unable to put into the hot, still, sodden air is doomed. Because even at midnight, it's high noon, the hottest day in history, and you're about to spend it in the Twilight Zone.
What is happening with all this heat and crazy flash floods? We can't find a better, short, big-picture summary than Swedish scientist Johan Rockström. He delivered it at a TED Countdown event, August 15, 2024. Rockström is the joint director of the Potsdam Institute for Climate Impact Research. That's in Germany. And he's the chief scientist at Conservation International. He's a pioneer in the work on planetary boundaries. The talk is 19 minutes. I'll add my comments after the recording. Here we go.
The Earth system scientists and climate scientists are getting seriously nervous. The planet is changing faster than we have expected. We are, despite years of raising the alarm, now seeing that the planet is actually in a situation where we underestimated risks. Abrupt changes are occurring in a way that is way beyond the realistic expectations in science. 15 years back, I introduced the planetary boundary framework, the scientific framework with the 9 Earth system processes that determines the stability, the resilience, and the life support on planet Earth. 10 years back, the world signed the Paris Climate Agreement. Almost 5 years back, we entered the decisive decade where our choices will determine the future for all generations on planet Earth. Where are we on this journey halfway into this decade? I will give you a scientific state of the planet report, the most objective assessment that science can give today. And it starts here. We've reached 1.2 degrees Celsius of global mean surface temperature rise, the warmest temperature on Earth over the past 100,000 years. We have just scratched on 1.5 degrees Celsius as an annual mean in 2023. But what worries us most is this. We are starting to see an acceleration of warming over the past 50 years, 0.18 degrees Celsius per decade from 1970 to 2010. But then from 2014 onwards, it abruptly jumps up to 0.26 per decade. And if we follow this path, we will crash through 2 degrees Celsius within 20 years and hit 3 degrees Celsius by the year 2100, a disastrous outcome caused by us humans. But it's not only carbon dioxide. Any parameter that matters for human well-being and our economies look the same. Here you have it, linear change up until the 1950s. We go into the great acceleration, and this is what we're seeing across overconsumption of fresh water, the 6th mass extinction of species, over-eutrophying our freshwater systems with nitrogen and phosphorus, all of it undermining the stability of the planet. As if this was not enough, we are seeing that this is now causing impacts across the entire economy. We're seeing bigger and bigger invoices being sent by the Earth system onto societies across the entire world in droughts, floods, heat waves, disease patterns, human reinforced storms, scientifically attributed to human caused climate change. 40 degrees Celsius of life threatening heat across all continents occurring in 2023. 52 degrees Celsius hitting the over 1,000 who lost their lives at the Hajj pilgrimage in June in Mecca. 3 times higher climate change risks now attributed to our cause of climate change. 2023 up to 12,000 deaths, 200 billion US dollars of cost, just in the US, up to 100 billion US dollars. This is seriously causing economic costs. We have scientifically in the past shown that this could cost a few percent of global GDP of the climate impacts caused by us. I can tell you that the latest scientific assessment is what you see on the screen here, an 18% loss of GDP by 2050 if we now follow the current path. This is equivalent to 38 trillion US dollars of loss per year in 2050. It's starting to hurt, both in human social costs and in economic costs. And this is happening at 1.2 degrees Celsius of global mean surface temperature rise, and we're following a pathway that takes us to 2.7 degrees Celsius in only 70 years. And we've had a 10,000-year period where our civilizations have developed, where we've had an enormous privilege of a planet at 14 degrees Celsius plus minus 0.5 degrees Celsius. That's the Holocene since we left the last ice age. And if you look 3 million years back, we never exceeded 2 degrees Celsius. That's the warmest temperature on Earth during the entire Quaternary. The coldest point, minus 5 degrees Celsius, ice age. I call this the corridor of life. Is it surprising that we scientists are getting really, really nervous? It's so much more than this. The first issue is buffering capacity. The second is the risk of crossing tipping points. And both are moving in the wrong direction. Buffering capacity is the Earth system's ability to dampen shocks and stress. Like, for example, soaking up greenhouse gases in intact nature on land and in the ocean. And so far, Mother Earth has been so forgiving. Here we have the evidence. What you see here is the hockey stick of fossil fuel burning in red and deforestation in yellow. Is it this tremendous climate forcing that has caused the 1.2 degrees Celsius climate crisis so far? The answer is no. 53% of the carbon dioxide from fossil fuel burning and land system change have been soaked up by intact nature on land and in the ocean. It's the only the blue sliver you see here, which remains in the atmosphere, causing the climate crisis so far. The problem is we have more and more scientific evidence of cracks in this system. Let's start on land. Land absorbs 31% of the carbon dioxide from our greenhouse gas emissions. We have more and more scientific evidence across so much research that the boreal forest in the Canada or the temperate mixed forest in Germany and Russia are starting to lose their carbon uptake capacity. Did you know that the latest science showed that the part of the Amazon rainforest, planet Earth's richest biome on terrestrial land, has already tipped over and is no longer a carbon sink? It is today a carbon source. It's no longer helping us. But as if that was not enough, what really worries us today is the ocean. The ocean absorbs 90% of the heat caused by human-induced climate change. This is well understood, but what really worries us is what you see here. This is the latest data on sea surface temperature across the ocean. What you see here is from 1980 until today, how gradually the ocean surface just gets warmer and warmer. It's actually warming all the way down to 2,000 meters depth. This is well understood in science. It's a deep concern. It's well represented in the climate models. We understand it. Then suddenly, in 2023, something happens. Temperatures just go completely off the charts, 0.4 degrees Celsius outside of the warmest temperature in previous years. What's happening? We admittedly must be honest here. We do not know. El Niño is certainly partly to blame, but cannot explain at all. 2024, it just continues. What is happening? We do not know, but the candidate number one is the energy imbalance caused by us humans. In 1 year alone, the heat equivalent to 300 times global electricity use is absorbed in the Earth system. Is it what we see on the screen here, an ocean that is starting to lose resilience? An ocean that is at risk of releasing heat to the atmosphere and self-amplifying warming? We do not know, but one thing is for certain, the ocean is sounding the alarm. Reasons for concern? Yes. We are now at a point where we are forced to ask the following question. Are we at risk of pushing the planet out of the basin of attraction, the stability of the planet where we've been since we left the last ice age, the extraordinarily stable Holocene state. And if we pushed ourselves outside, drifting away unstoppably towards a hothouse Earth where we get self-amplified warming and losing life support on Earth. What could take us there? Well, we know it. It is if we cross tipping points. Big systems like the Greenland Ice Sheet, the overturning of heat in the North Atlantic, the coral reef systems, the Amazon rainforest, are tipping element systems. Push them too far and they will flip over from a desired state that helps us to a state that will self-amplify in the wrong direction, going from cooling and dampening to self-amplifying and warming. A rainforest tips over to a savanna state. Now, we have now mapped the 16 tipping element systems, which are now scientifically cataloged, that regulate the climate system. These 16, and you see the five in the ground zero on planet Earth in the Arctic, are connected via cascades through the ocean, particularly via the AMOC, the Atlantic overturning of heat in the ocean, all the way down to Antarctica. These are big biophysical systems that we all depend on, global commons for the stability of the planet. The question is, at what temperatures are they at risk of tipping from helping us to becoming self-amplifying foes? Well, for the first time, we have an attempt to answer that question. What you see here are the 16 tipping element systems on the y-axis, and in red you see the uncertainty range, the best estimates in science. Darker the red, the higher the risk of tipping is the temperature levels at which they're likely to cross the thresholds. The average temperature at which they are likely to tip is the yellow circle lines you see here. What this tells us is the following. Five of these 16 are likely to cross their tipping points already at 1.5 degrees Celsius. The Greenland Ice Sheet, the West Antarctic Ice Sheet, abrupt thawing of permafrost, losing all tropical coral reef systems, and collapse of the barren sea ice. Just the two ice sheets hold 10 meter sea level rise, which would be unstoppable on the long term. Now sure, there's scientific uncertainty here, as you see from these graphs. But there's one red thread in science for humanity, in the scientific message, and it's this. The more we understand of the Earth system, the higher is the risk. And here is the proof. This is five IPCC assessments, the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change, 30 years of scientific advancements. Here again, you see risk assessment, darker the red, higher the likelihood of causing irreversible change in the climate system. 30 years back, the risk was put at 5 degrees Celsius of tipping, and coming down to current state of science, the risk is set at 1.5 to 2 degrees Celsius. We are in the midst of a danger zone today. But it can be even worse than that. Let's go to the Amazon basin. Again, the richest terrestrial ecosystem on land. Climate science estimates the risk of the Amazon rainforest tipping over irreversibly to a savanna at 3 to 5 degrees of global mean surface temperature rise. A really high temperature, you know, unlikely even to be met over the next 70 years. But if we lose forest cover, the risk is that the system can tip already at 1.5 to 2 degrees Celsius if we lose more than 20 to 25% of forest cover. So that's a very dangerous combination. Where are we today? We are at 1.2 degrees Celsius of global mean surface temperature rise and 17% of deforestation. We are very close to a tipping point in the Amazon rainforest. Very close. What shall we do to avoid these unmanageable outcomes? Well, the IPCC is clear on the pathway. To stay under 1.5 degrees Celsius, to avoid crossing tipping points, we need to operate, to navigate within the global carbon budget that gives us a chance of holding 1.5. What remains for us is only 200 billion tons of carbon dioxide that we can continue emitting to have a 50% chance of holding 1.5. We emit today 40 billion tons of carbon dioxide per year, giving us 5 years at current rate of emission before we've consumed the budget. We are seriously running out of time. And the pathway for a safe landing is also well studied and understood. You have it here. Bend the curve of emissions immediately and follow a path where we reduce emissions by at least 7% per year for a safe landing and a net zero world economy by 2050. But it's more than that. We also know that even if we succeed with this, we have already loaded the atmosphere with so much greenhouse gases, with so much climate forcing, that we inevitably face a period of overshoot. We must now be prepared for a very likely breaching of the 1.5 degrees Celsius planetary boundary on climate somewhere between 2030 and 2035, in 5 to 10 years' time. And then have at best a 30-40 year period of overshoot before we can come back to 1.5 by the end of this century. We would exceed with 0.1 to 0.3 degrees Celsius the 1.5 limit, meaning up to 1.8 degrees Celsius. What does this tell us? Well, I can tell you there are two main messages. Message one, buckle up. We know for certain, 100% certainty, that this means more droughts, more floods, more heat waves, more human reinforced storms, more disease during one generation's time. 2023, the warmest year on record, will be looked back upon as a mild year. Message two, why would the planet come back to 1.5 after overshoot? Well, the answer is very simple. The health of the planet must be kept intact. We must continue having a planet that can absorb 50% of the carbon dioxide. We must have a planet that crosses no tipping points. We must have a planet that remains healthy and keeping heat intact in the ocean. That is why we need planetary boundaries. The planetary boundary framework that defines the 9 Earth system processes that regulates the stability and resilience of the entire planet. Climate, biodiversity, nitrogen, phosphorus, land, fresh water, air pollutants, and chemicals. That is the challenge. To summarize that, there is no 1.5 degrees Celsius delivery on the Paris Agreement by only phasing out fossil fuels. We also need to come back into the safe operating space of the nature-based biodiversity, all the planetary boundaries of nature. This means the science is clear. The window is rapidly closing. But there is still some light in the window. We actually have evidence that we've reached a pivotal point, not only in terms of risk, but also in terms of opportunity to transform the world towards a safe and just future for humanity. Linear change is no longer an option. The only option is exponential change. We know that the only currency that matters is speed and scale. We also need to become stewards of the entire planet. We need to now recognize from local to global level that we're all so intertwined that we must govern the entire planet. I know that is very daunting, but what choice do we have when on the line is the future of our children on planet Earth? And we have the solutions. We know that solving the planet crisis is not utopia. It's not fantasy. We have the solutions for a secure, stable future for humanity. What are those transformations? Well, we know them. It's a rapid transition away from fossil fuels. It is a transition towards circular business models. It is transitioning towards healthy diets from sustainable food systems. And it's not only halting loss of nature, it's also scaling the regeneration and restoration of marine systems, soils, forests, and wetlands. We have solutions for all of these. Just take green energy, which today is cheaper than fossil fuel-based energy. It's our choice that we're facing today. Now, I was nervous already in 2020 when we entered this decisive decade and had to cut global emissions by half by 2030. Halfway into this decade, the road is steeper than ever. It's steeper than ever. This is what really, really concerns us, that we have a situation where we now need to move so fast. And I've been standing on stages like this so many times, sharing the dire scientific diagnostic. But still, I just told you that I do conclude that there is still some window open. There is a light in the tunnel. And you may ask, what is it that makes me able to continue to be a realistic optimist in this situation? The most dire situation, I must admit, in my whole professional life. Well, actually, I promise this is an honest statement. There are so many positive items as well. The most important one in my mind is that we have ample evidence that citizens across the world, a majority of them, care about nature and climate. They trust climate science, they're concerned about climate change, and they want solutions. And the second key factor is that we have so much evidence today that the solutions are not only available, but if we implement them, we get a more healthy, stable, secure future with the jobs and the economies that can compete and provide livelihoods into the future. This means, dear friends, that solving the planetary crisis is not only necessary, it is possible, and we all win if we succeed. Thank you very much.
That was Swedish scientist and Potsdam Institute co-director Johan Rockström, speaking at a TED Countdown event August 15th, 2024. This is the best, most trustworthy assessment of where we now stand with climate risk in the big picture. But I have doubts about Rockström's "we can do it" conclusions. First, we as humans could still avert an absolutely hellish world that eventually destroys civilization and drives many species to extinction. We can't avoid a much hotter, destabilized world, but we could leave a survivable climate, and it would still be enjoyably livable in some places. That window is still open, it's true. But Rockström fails to point out this is exactly what we are not doing. Fossil fuel burning is not decreasing. It is setting historic records. Major fossil fuel producing corporations and countries are actively building for still more production. The public, still seeking cheap gas, or any gas at all, is not even close to revolting against this model. They believe they will starve if the drill, drill, drill model is not the accepted plan.
Drill, baby, drill, and drill now.
Everyone is content to put small bandages on a gaping wound and talk endlessly about emissions reductions that are decades away. We swallow green lies like bedtime stories for children. So I'm going to focus on just one big example of that hair-raising suicidal schizophrenia. Chevron, you know, the big oil company, proudly announces they have developed a whole new frontier for more fossil fuels. They will drill deep into the sea for oil and gas under enormous pressure. It is expensive and very risky, with many similarities to the Deepwater Horizon explosion in the Gulf of Mexico back in 2010, and that was the largest marine pollution event in American history, and that's saying a lot. To avoid deadly increases in heat and destabilization of planetary weather systems, humans need to slash greenhouse gas emissions between 7 and 10% every year, immediately. Instead, we're increasing greenhouse gases. The rate of carbon dioxide, the longest-lasting greenhouse gas, has increased from about 2 parts per million annually a few years ago to well over 3 parts per million this year. Consequently, we already passed 420 parts per million, going on by 425 carbon dioxide. So the last thing living things need is a happy announcement that a whole new frontier of carbon is now coming on stream. The ugly truth? There is plenty of coal, oil, and gas left to fry us all and our descendants. New fracking reserves have been discovered all over the world on land. Fracking blows up the underground to release those tiny bubbles of gas and oil trapped in the rock. We have already gone that far. Some countries and multinational oil companies announced a new frontier for fossil fuels in the Arctic. Shell tried to go for it, but withdrew amid a storm of criticism from environmentalists and actual storms in the Arctic. Greenpeace hung protesters on another drilling rig off Greenland. We don't know what the Russians are doing off the coast of Siberia. So far, the drill the Arctic play has been mostly stalled off, keeping billions and billions of tons of oil and gas under the Arctic Sea, where it has to stay. But it's like the game of whack-a-mole. Just recently, we got another new report that Antarctica has vast amounts of fossil fuels hiding below the ice. That's another new frontier that hasn't been conquered yet. Of course, the usual suspects like BP and Shell want to drill deeper and deeper into the seabed for more profits. The government says it's okay. We all remember the utter disaster when this went wrong for BP in 2010. The Deepwater Horizon drill rig exploded, burned, and sank, killing 11 people and leaking oil into the Gulf of Mexico for 87 days. The cause of that deep-sea blowout involved sloppy safety management, unexpected circumstances, rushed work to save money, and high-pressure gases in the seabed. Now Chevron is going even deeper. This time, the company says it developed technology to safely handle very high-pressure pockets of gas and oil. It's an all-electric dream drilling rig, better for the environment, they say. What could possibly go wrong? On August 12, 2024, Chevron put out its press release titled, Energy Everywhere, A New Frontier in Deepwater Development. They call their new drilling rig Anchor. It is expected to produce 75,000 barrels of oil every day and 28 million gross cubic feet of natural gas daily. The rig is 25 stories high, taller than the Statue of Liberty. It is connected to 7 subsea wells, about 5,000 feet below the surface. Some estimate this one field could produce up to 440 million barrels of oil equivalent, counting both oil and gas. That means approximately 189 million metric tons of CO2 emissions. This one rig alone could heat the planet by about 0.095 degrees Celsius. Industry experts suggest another 5 billion tons of fossil fuels may lie under the Gulf of Mexico alone, deep in the sea. That would add almost 16 billion tons of CO2, leading to an increase of 2 parts per million carbon dioxide in the atmosphere, just that one field. In other words, deep-sea drilling in the American part of the Gulf of Mexico alone could produce additional greenhouse gases equal to about 2/3 of the total world increase of CO2 in 2022. This is a climate blowout which cannot be allowed to happen. Anchor is expected to produce for the next 30 years, well beyond the true net zero timetable, well beyond the 2 degrees C safety line, and during decades of ever-worsening climate-driven disasters, including in the Gulf of Mexico. Get ready for the next super hurricane. Another similar rig from another company, Beacon Offshore Energy, in the Gulf of Mexico, is already in the works, hoping to open and produce in mid-2025. This deep-water, high-pressure technology could spread around the world. Everyone with untapped oil and gas below the seabed is watching. Are you listening, Australia? Big environmental groups should react quickly with public campaigns and protests. As with the Arctic, this new frontier of roasting the planet needs to be shut down and closed off. It can only accelerate destruction by a destabilized climate and a hothouse world. Save the deep seabed and save the world.
O heavenly grid, help us spare up thy standard, our chevron flashing bright across the gulf of compromise, standing humble on the rich field of mobile American thinking. Here in this shell we call life.
Is this new technology really different from the disastrous Deepwater Horizon rig? Chevron says it is, while claiming the new rig is better for the environment, too. There are entire websites with pages and pages developed to debunking greenwash from Chevron Corporation. According to the Climate Action 100 Plus Net Zero Company Benchmark, Chevron has not published any ambition to meet net zero, or even reduce its greenhouse gas emissions. Chevron invests practically nothing of its vast income on renewable energy. They spend billions to find and produce more and more oil and gas. That's their plan, no matter what happens to the climate, no matter how hot you get. Meanwhile, their executives say, quote, like you, we at Chevron are committed to helping achieve a lower carbon future, end quote. Chevron says what they do is good. They do it the right way, and they accept science. So, you know, this company is not a reliable source of information. They may be misleading, and they keep all kinds of things